Now on Sports Talk, it's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer of the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to take your questions about the great outdoors in South Carolina. Give him a call at 888-898-2525. It's SC Wild from DNR on the Sports Talk Radio Network.
It's a great time to have Major Billy Downer from the Department of Natural Resources with us here on SC Wild on Sports Talk on this Wednesday night. The weather's been kind of crappy around the state of South Carolina all week long. A lot of heavy rain, thunderstorms, water levels are rising, rivers are rising, ponds and lakes are filling. You got to be concerned about flash floods and flooding on the highways and the back roads and all that kind of stuff. And we'll open things up by welcoming in Major Downer and then talk about what DNR does in these situations and some of his advice. Major Downer, welcome in, sir. How are you? It's great to have you with us once again here on SC Wild.
Another night at SC Wild with Phil Kornblut. I could not think of a better 28 minutes to spend than with my great friend, an outdoor sports mentor.
There you go. I learn something every time we visit and every time we have SC Wild. So you heard me kind of lay it out there for you. Before you go into some other topics you want to talk about, I think it's topical for us to talk about.
Your show. Go ahead.
No. Yep. Talk about the weather and how much rain we're getting in the state and the flash flooding and the threat of flooding from the rivers and the lakes and the ponds and some of the warning signals, warning signs that you put out there to folks who are maybe traveling around or out and about and how they can be careful.
Sure. So, you know, anytime we have the threat of flash floods, you know, what is a flash flood? It's basically where water rises quicker than it can dissipate across the landscape. So you have the opportunity during a flash flood for culverts to fill up quicker than they can empty, and water backs up on the roadways, water backs up in the streams, into low areas. And anytime that happens, you have the opportunity for people to face rising water that's rising quicker than you can get away from sometimes, or quicker than you may realize. And so many times people will be driving across a low place in a road and think the water's only a few inches deep. And by the time they figure out it's too deep to traverse with a car, the car may stall and they may be stuck in water. So some of the things, you know, first thing, you know, if you find yourself, if you see water, turn around. The phrase they used back in 15 during the flood was turn around, don't drown. But, you know, if you can see the yellow line on the road under the water, people go, "Ah, it's not too deep." Well, you do that until all of a sudden you're out there and the yellow line disappears because it gets deeper, because there's a dip in the road you can't see, and people lose lives. We had, you know, I remember in 15, a DOT worker was driving and trying to cross some flooded area on 378, and before he knew it, his truck got swept off the road, pushed into the trees, and he drowned. A very terrible tragedy, but we saw a lot of that in 15. Now, are we getting that kind of rain right now? No, we're not. But since you mentioned it, you know, when you have the threat of flash floods, if you live in low areas, you know, stay away from the water. If you're driving a car and you see water crossing the road, you know, stop. You know, and absolutely investigate it. I actually got out of my car vehicle several times during the flood trying to get back home, and I'd walk out in the water and just kind of check the depth a little bit, slowly but surely. But, you know, the best advice is to turn around, find another roadway. Because if the road's covered in water, you know, not only if you're going too fast, you'll hydroplane, but if you get water that's too deep, your car will move faster than you think. And even though how heavy it is, water is a powerful force, and it can sweep you off the road. And once it starts picking you up and it pushes you off the road, it pushes you off into a ditch, your car can flip, and you can be submerged in water before you know it. So the best advice is to turn around and find another road. So that's my best advice for rising water right now. Of course, if you find yourself in a situation you can't get out of, always dial 911 first. Let someone know where you are, what road you're on. Be specific with your description so so that we can get someone to you. But again, best advice, turn around.
Do you, in the case of, and that's the best advice, you're right, but you know how people are sometimes. If you find yourself caught in a situation where the water has taken control of your vehicle, car, or truck, and it's taking you into a ditch or, you know, something more dangerous, a pond or a lake or something like that, and you're kind of submerged or heading in that direction, what do you do? Do you have any experience, not personal experience, but have you ever dealt with a situation like that? And what do you do? What's your advice?
There's no good advice for that situation because you could tell someone to try to get out, but then you get swept down, you drown, you can't swim. There's all kinds of problems with that scenario that it's hard to give a correct one answer to. You know, getting out of the vehicle is a must at that point. If the vehicle's moving down, you know, that like that.
Mm-hmm.
Get on top of the vehicle if you can. If the vehicle stops, trying to get on top of the vehicle, get to high ground as much as you can. That, like I said, that is a no-win scenario. It's bad. It's hard to give great advice for that because there's so many things could happen. Tell somebody to get out, the car flips over, they drown, they're like, well, you told me to get out. Well, you know, again, turn around. Don't get in that water because once the water's taking your vehicle, there's not really one right answer going on there because there's too many variables to tell you what to do. The best thing, if you're caught in water like that, is to get to high ground as high as you can. You know, we have people climbing and holding on to trees, people standing on top of their car, and those are all ways that have helped save people's lives in high water situations. You know, houses, things like that. You know, there's nothing in your house. This is one thing I can tell you from the flood is if water starts taking on and how water's rising in the house, get out. Don't start saving pictures. Don't start saving, you know, get out. If it's to that point where the water's rising in your house, it's already too late. Get out because you don't know how fast that water could rise. And if it's rising in your house, then your exit strategy is also going to be in trouble because if your house is low enough to have water there, that makes sense. You better get out of the house and find a way out, away from that water. That's first priority. Again, sometimes there's no great right answer in a very bad situation.
We're talking with Major Billy Downer, SC Wild, here on Sports Talk from DNR. One more thing on this. Sort of on this, and then you can take it in whatever direction you want to take it. But, you know, the world is captivated by what's happening with that submarine, that little excursion down to the Titanic in that vessel. And I think we're all captivated by that and hoping for the best. Does DNR have any sort of vehicle – water vehicle like that for cases where you've got to go, where your divers have got to go into maybe some deep water in South Carolina? Do y'all have any kind of what's that called, a submerger?
Submersible
type thing?
Not.
Yeah.
We do not. No. Our divers are trained for deep water diving, though, to a specific depth. So they can dive, you know, the deepest water around, I think in our state, you got 150 feet. Lake Murray, and there's some areas on Lake Jocassee. The water gets very cold at those depths, and it's very, very dangerous when you're diving that deep. We do not have any kind of vehicles to go that deep. We do have devices, side scan, sonar type devices, things that will assist us now in the past where we used to have to lay out lines and buoys and run a line. Basically, a man had to get on the bottom and run that line with his hand out, basically in the blind, feeling for something. And you ran a pattern. Now they use that side scan, which is tremendously valuable to us because of the time it saves. Because again, once you're looking for somebody on the bottom, it's a recovery. It's not a rescue. It's a recovery. And it's still important to get to that person as fast as you can so you can bring closure to the family.
Yeah.
Because they are someone's family. And the devices we use like that are assist us in looking for things on the bottom before we go down. But we do not have anything we ride in or on to go down to something.
I know you're like everybody else, captivated by this story, and you're probably following it even more closely than we are. Just what's your take on this particular story and what these folks have been able to do before, like going down the Titanic and exploring, you know, that deep in the water, but also the now that we learn the details of what it's like inside that that vehicle, you know, five people in there, 96 hours of air, you know, limited ability to move around and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. Just is that something you'd ever like to go into as a guy that loves to explore things?
No, I'm not claustrophobic, but that would make me claustrophobic, I think.
Yeah.
You know, certainly the images from the Titanic over the last 20 years have been captivating. And the movie, of course, recreating what it looked like. They've even made a vessel to kind of mimic the Titanic. If some of the they're doing, you know, vessels like the Queen Elizabeth, whatever, to give you that experience of the old cruise lines. But that depth that that ship is at is under so much intense pressure. It's really incredible where we've gotten to in our ability to dive with multiple people, and to allow people to do that. Of course, it's very expensive. It's for the elite, no doubt, to be able to experience that. But at that depth, the pressure is so great, it makes rescue hard because, again, you can't just send a diver down to go get them. You've got to send some type of device that's pressurized because, again, at that depth, when you're coming up, even in 150 feet, like we're talking about in South Carolina, divers have to stop on the way back up, and they have to sit for a bit and let the pressure kind of slowly regulate as they come up, or they'll get what we all have heard called the bends, which is when you build bubbles, nitrogen bubbles, in your blood. Not a good thing. So a lot to that story as far as, you know, what's going on down there, because you can't see. They're trying to, you know, get to them. It's such a hard depth, and sea conditions up top. All those things play into that. That's a lot. But, you know, one thing I'd like to talk about tonight that is big, is big as far as in this state right now, and very much talked about among neighborhoods. Our phones are ringing off the hook. Deer. You know, we like to talk about deer, but fawns. This is fawn season, and does are dropping fawns left and right. It seems like this year is just a year that's uncanny for the amount of deer. Farmers are screaming that deer are eating the crops up. And I've seen so many calls in the last few weeks, people calling about baby deer or fawns in their yard. And what do? We found this fawn. Her mom left it. The mom left it, and we need somebody to come get it. Well, first of all, let me stop right there, and let's explain this for the listener that may not understand this. A doe drops a fawn. They can have twins, and they will set them somewhere. That fawn will sit down, will basically curl up in a tall grass, and the doe is going to leave that fawn and go feed because she has to feed to create the milk. She's got to create energy for that milk to form. So she's got to feed twice as hard after that birth now to really get her energy back up and her body to produce that milk. So she's got to have time to do that. So she leaves these fawns. This is why they got brown and white spots. As hard as that is to believe, it's the perfect camouflage in the woods. And they sit extremely still, which is why they allow people to come up to them, almost all the way up to them before they jump, or sometimes they won't even jump up. And does will do that in your yard. They will put a fawn in your yard. Because deer have become, as we've talked about, they're very adaptive, and they are easily can adapt to an urban environment where they're eating on shrubs, and they're raising their young in an urban environment in and around houses. So they're going to put those fawns down where they think safe, or the fawn's going to wander, and it's going to sit down, and mom knows where it's at. Trust me. The big part of this is mom knows where that fawn laid down at. And if you leave that fawn alone, she's going to come back and get it. Don't touch it. Don't bother it. Leave it alone. She's going to come back and get it. And that is 9 times out of 10 what happens. They set the fawns down, the fawn's bed down, mom goes off and eats, and she's going to come back to that fawn Every time. Again, 9 times out of 10, she's going to do that. The 1 time out of 10, or really probably the 1 in 100 times, is going to be if something happened to the doe, and that's very rare. For a fawn to be bedded down and mom get hurt somewhere. Now, we have had a couple weird, again, when it was 1 in 100, like we talk about, you know, had somebody's dogs attack the deer. Mm. And they called, and they found the fawn afterwards. And the doe was dead, of course. The dogs had killed the doe, and they found the fawn, and they didn't know what to do. At that point, yeah, mom's not coming back. And we have rehabilitators and people that will help pick those up. But those rehabilitators are few and far between now because there's so many deer out there. And but anyway, you know, the whole part of the story gets worse because the dogs kill the deer. So that's a whole another part of the story of what happened there. But again, when folks see fawns, and this is the time of year, you're going to find fawns in your yard. You're going to find fawns at the edge of the field. They're usually going to be in high brush, bedded down. Sometimes the fawn may not pick a good spot. So let me say that. Sometimes that fawn may not be in a real high brush area. It may have picked a bad spot to bed down. Still, leave it alone. Don't move it. Don't try to help her out. Trust me, nature's been doing this a lot longer than we have. And she'll be just fine, or he'll be just fine. Little buck will be just fine until mom gets back to it. So I cannot reiterate that enough. Leave these fawns alone. Let them lie where they are. Mom's going to come back. She did not forget about them. She's a lot better parent than we are. Ever thought about being. They got a great memory, and they're going to come back and get that baby every time. But like I said, this is one of those, this year has just been off the chart for me of just the amount of deer. And I don't know really what's going on this year, but it just seems like deer coming out of the woodwork in agricultural fields and causing a lot of damage this year. And there's a lot of discussion about that, and people have different opinions, but you know, farmers are out there trying to grow crops. And I understand that. We have to, one of the things as a wildlife department, we have to do, the Department of Natural Resources, we have to manage game. And managing game, again, we don't have, despite the people that want to prove otherwise, we do not have an eastern cougar anymore. They're not here. Mm. We don't have the wolf anymore, the red wolf. So the natural predators of deer are gone. So man is the only control mechanism for deer, and that's why we have hunting seasons. But unfortunately, sometimes we can't keep up with that, with these farm agricultural fields. And we really put a lot of pressure on farmers to make sure, hey, we don't want them using what we call a depredation permit to control deer. We want them using hunting first and primary. They should have a good hunting program where they're taking deer during the right time of year when they're not fawning, things like that. But there are situations where deer get out of hand anyway, even with good hunting pressure. There's just a lot of deer in certain areas, and they're eating crops. And if somebody was taking dollar bills out of your pocket, you want them to stop, probably, wouldn't you? Well, that's how a farmer looks at it, too. When they're eating that soybean field or that corn field, that's dollar bills out of their pockets. And I get that. And so managing that, again, one of the hardest things you do in wildlife management is managing people. And people includes farmers, and people includes hunters, and people includes those that want to protect wildlife, no doubt about it. It's a balancing act. It's something we really strive hard at, and I think we do a really good job trying to balance all those things together, using all the tools that we can to manage, and one of those tools is the depredation permits for farmers to help manage our wildlife population. But again, hunting's our primary method. Of course, and nobody wants to waste game by any means, and there are control mechanisms for that. So just before I get off, and I will make sure that folks understand that if there are farmers that have a depredation permit, they are issued a certain number of tags, and they cannot take more than those tags. And they are required to tag deer just like you do during hunting season, and most of the farmers, if not all the ones that I know, utilize the deer even this time of year. So they'll either donate. Or they'll use the deer themselves. So deer just don't get shot and thrown to the side. They actually get used this time of year as well, which is good. I try to, you know, that's one of the things as I've worked in the field is to encourage folks to not waste animals just because you're trying to remove a problem. So I think we've done a really good job with that. Mm-hmm. But yes, deer populations are, looks like it's up. If there's any indicator about the amount of complaints we're getting, this deer season should be a really good one. coming up here in just about two more months. So I always laugh again when deer season goes out January 1st. My boss used to say, "Hey, just wait, boys, 6 more months, you'll start again."
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much it does, because August 15th it starts again.
Wow!
And that is not that far away. Yeah, we're less than 260 days away.
You know, that is such a exciting time in the state, because what else you got? August 15th, you're right in the middle of preseason college football camp. You're in the middle of the Panthers camp, high school football starting that week, and you got deer season getting underway.
Man, what better combination? Football and deer season. I mean, really.
Mm-hmm.
Only in South Carolina.
Well, I can't tell you how many times I've been up and down the interstates, you know, on a Saturday going to a football game, or maybe in mid-August going to practice somewhere and seeing a guy with a truck, and he's got his haul back there in the back after being out in the fields that day.
Right, absolutely, no doubt about it. But you know, we don't want to neglect this too, Phil. As we're approaching July 4th is going to come to us probably before we have our next show. So this is actually the show before July 4th. So let's end up with a quick reminder, folks. Remember, July 4th being one of our busier boating weekends. Again, South Carolina is a huge boating state. Remember a couple of important things. When you get out in the water, because we've already had some tragic accidents and a few deaths in the last few weeks, always maintain a proper lookout in that boat. Make sure if you're the captain of the boat, if you're in charge, you're maintaining a proper lookout. That means you're looking in front of you, behind you, you're thinking defensively. You know, be ready to react to anything that happens. Maintain that proper lookout. It's the number one cause of all of our accidents in this state and across the nation. But maintain that proper lookout. Be ready. Be defensive. Look for that person on the jet, on the skis. Look for that person on the jet ski that might swerve in front of you that didn't see you. You expect them to do the unexpected. When you see kids out there on a tube, pay attention. If somebody falls off, be looking for that. Because that little head pops up, be ready to take action to slow your vessel down, stop, or whatever you need to do to avoid hitting someone. Because no one wants to have a July 4th weekend that ends in a tragedy. We all know that. So be safe out there. Make sure you got a life jacket for everybody in the boat. And always remember this as well. When it comes to alcohol, it's not illegal to have alcohol in your boat. It's not illegal to have a beer in a boat. But if you're going to drive the boat, don't consume alcohol. Have somebody else do it. Designate a driver. Have them prepare before you go out. You have that designated driver that you know can handle that boat, knows how to operate the boat, so that you can get your crowd out there, have a good time, but have a safe return home and not have trouble with anybody else as well, so everybody can safely return home. If we all did that, we wouldn't have accidents on the water.
Hmm. Great point. And remember, things happen more quickly on the water than anywhere else, right?
Absolutely. Again, boats don't have brakes, so sometimes it's harder to stop a boat a lot of times. So you got to be reactive, be ready for anything to happen. So again, maintain the proper lookout. Make sure you got a life jacket for everybody on the boat. At night, if you're going to July 4th to the fireworks, make sure your running lights work. Your red and green bow light and your white all-around light, all three are important. Make sure that all of them work and are in working order before you go out there for a July 4th fireworks show.
Great words of wisdom, Major. We want to thank you for being with us tonight. You enjoy the rest of the week and your July 4th holiday. I know you'll be busy with a number of different things. And then we'll catch you the day after on the 5th. We'll have a great show the 5th, the day after the 4th.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you, sir. Thank you so much. Major Billy Downer with us here on Sports Talk. SC Wild from DNR. Great words of wisdom from him. Really enjoyed the conversation tonight as we tried to tie in some things going on locally here in the state with the weather, with that major international story. Man, I feel for those folks in that little thing. I just, like the Major said, I think I am a touch claustrophobic. Just thinking about it gives me the chills. And I couldn't imagine being in that situation. I hope it turns out for the best tonight. I hope we get some great news here soon. With that, we bid you adieu. We'll see you tomorrow night right here on Sports Talk. Have a great night. Thanks for being with us. Thank you, Pat. We'll see you tomorrow.